Welcome to the Plant Spirit Podcast on connecting with plant consciousness and the healing wisdom of nature. I'm your host, Sarah Artemisia, and I am deeply honored to introduce our next guest to the show today. Dr. Anita Sanchez is a Nahua, which some people know as Aztec, and Mexican-American transformational leader. And she's the author of the international award-winning book, The Four Sacred Gifts, Indigenous Wisdom for Modern Times. Anita bridges Indigenous teachings with the latest science to inspire and equip people to enjoy meaningful, empowered lives and careers while caring for the earth and for each other. She's a member of the Transformational Leadership Council and a board member of Bioneers and the Pachamama Alliance. And she's passionate about inspiring people to discover and trust their gifts so that they can become a life-giving connection to people and to the planet. So Anita, thank you so much for joining us today. Such an honor to have you here.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here always, Sarah.
Absolutely. Love your work. Respect your work so deeply. And I'd love to start out our conversation today hearing a bit about your connection and work with the Four Sacred Gifts, which you wrote an incredible book about that I'd highly recommend everyone check out. It's called The Four Sacred Gifts, Indigenous Wisdom for Modern Times. And I'm curious if you could share with us a bit about what are the Four Sacred Gifts and why are they so important for this time?
Yes, thank you. Yes, the Four Sacred Gifts is based on an eagle hoot prophecy. And as Indigenous people, we're guided by prophecy. And prophecies don't foretell the truth, but they let us know what may or may not occur given we adhere to the original knowledge, which has many different ways of saying it, depending on which tradition around the world of Indigenous people, but ultimately is about love and care for not only ourselves, but each other. And that's two-legged in all our relatives, plants and others, and then also generations out. So in the 90s, I was doing my volunteer work that I do with youth. And while I was there, though, I was in one of these places in 95 where I was really starting to question, like, why am I doing all this work in diversity and inclusion? It seems like people's negative beliefs about other people who look different than them was growing and all these different things. So, but lo and behold, the universe, the great mystery provides. So while I'm there, an elder brings this hoop and shares this prophecy. And in the prophecy, it was what happened is he was told to call out for Indigenous elders, healers from all over the world, and create this hoop with 100 eagle feathers. And that during this time, spirit would inform them of what to put into the hoop because we are in serious deep winter time, bigger than anyone can imagine is coming. And that why in part this is happening in big part is because the two-leggeds, human beings, have forgot who they are and what we are, how to be in harmony and balance within ourselves, other people, and then all our relations in the hoop of life. So the four gifts are, I invite you to listen with the softest part of your ears and your expanding heart. And the first gift is to help us bring harmony and balance to ourselves and others, is the gift of the power to forgive the unforgivable. The gift of the power to forgive the unforgivable. Just put that in the ceremonial part of your heart. And notice your breathing and notice that probably is already coming for you, the things that maybe you've forgiven already. And maybe something is coming forward as, oh, maybe I am to forgive this, or can I? And that's the first gift. The second gift, just take a deep breath, in and exhale. And the second gift is the gift of the power of healing, the gift of the power of healing. And I love that gift because healing is something we need every day. And healing, of course, is part of the plant, spirit of the plant, and all of this is. So take that gift of the power of healing and put that into the ceremonial part of your heart and breathe in. And you can feel the gratitude for what has already been healed, but also what may need healing at the spiritual, mental, emotional, or physical level, or multiple of those. And take another deep breath. And then the third gift is the gift of the power of unity. gift of the power of unity. I'm kind of smiling right now from ear to ear because, oh, this gift of unity is so desperately needed at this time. And so put that gift into the ceremony or part of your heart, the gift of the power of unity. And again, sensing within your own body, your mind, your heart, your spirit, what is in connection, what is in alignment, and what is not, but also all the communities you belong to and what is in unity, what could go deeper, and just take a deep breath. And then the final fourth gift that they put in there, that spirit told them, was necessary for all human beings to use to remember how to be a life-giving force in this super life, is the gift of the power of hope. The gift of the power of hope in action. Take the gift of the power of hope, hope in action, and put that into the ceremonial part of your heart. And just breathe it in. In a time when some people are saying it's difficult to have hope. And just remember when you have. And knowing that there are ways to ignite this in relationship with each other and our other relatives, like the plants, dreams. So these four, you can open your eyes or take another deep breath. And these four gifts, the promise from Spirit is that if you use these gifts, it's not one time, it's integrated into your life, so you're using them all the time, is the gift of the power to forgive the unforgivable, the gift of the power of healing, the gift of the power of unity, and the gift of the power of hope in action. Use these four gifts, and the promise is you will remember. You will know how to be in right relationship with yourself, with other two-legged human beings, and with all our relatives in the hoop of life. Harmony and balance can be restored, and then we'll be able to create the thriving world that we want for all of us now and for seven generations forward.
So powerful. Thank you so much for sharing that. And there's so much in what you just shared that I hear of this continuity or continued message of being in right relationship with all life, with the self, with all life, and how this is so important that we're really being invited to really step into this in the way that is being asked of us in this time. And one of the other things that you just shared that really stuck out to me was how there are ways to ignite hope, which can be really hard and challenging to connect with in these times. And you mentioned dreams when you shared that. And so I was curious if you could tell us a bit more about that, about the power of dreaming and how dreams really are so interwoven in with this aspect of igniting hope.
Yes, absolutely. Dream. So those of you who are daydreamers or night dreamers, just dream more. And those who have maybe, oh my, I don't know that I've been dreaming or I've forgotten my dream. It's really a call if this is what you hear, because, you know, I have dreams from very little. My earliest dream I remember is 3 and 4, where I knew what I was going to be when I grew up. I saw the earth and all these stick people, different colors and sizes, and we all had our hands on each other's hearts. And when I got to kindergarten, when I got the ripe old age of 5 and went to school, I drew that. And I shared it with the classroom and the teacher, and the kids laughed, and the teacher said, put away crayons. But I knew in that moment, I didn't have any other language for it, but I knew that that's what I was supposed to do, is connect hearts of people all over the world. And in fact, despite all of the obstacles to the contrary of growing up where I did and some of the challenges, that's indeed what I've been doing since my early 20s, is traveling all over the world, working for various businesses and nonprofit organizations, consulting them and connecting hearts. And, you know, I just didn't know it was a PhD. So dreaming is so important, because what happens in dreaming is that you have a vision, an image of what is possible. And despite any of the facts of the country, that possibility is there. That's one of the beauties of being a human being, is that we can do that. And then the way our minds work, our brains work, is that once you have an image, there's a pull, a tug toward that. Even when you come up with obstacles, it's still being pulled toward. And so that dreaming can get ignited in many ways. I mean, just being still for us in dreaming a lot was paying attention at night before we went to bed. We actually asked for our ancestors for anything that provides us safety and wisdom. So I often bring in the trees. I love trees. I'd bring in birds. I bring in sometimes the sun or the moon, more often the moon than the sun, and then great grandparents and things like that. But what happens is that gets ignited. And so you begin having those possibilities. And that really is all of the, like the good medicine that Indigenous people have, and that those came from listening to the earth, to the plants, to the other, to the water. And then they got reinforced in dreaming and bringing that forward. And that's not just individual. So that's the other part, is people are like, well, I can try this because I won't feel foolish if I'm just spending more time dreaming. But it's collective dreaming. And so it's wonderful when we can create the time and space where we can collectively dream as well, to bring things into being that is being asked for. And so that dreaming, I'll just say, you know, it's a really tough thing to do. It's so wonderful, and I'm being facetious, because what more wonderful thing to do than to imagine what is possible? And then from that, then seeing what already in your life, I haven't met a single person that you had an image about something, and then it came about. And you could go and say, name all the facts, but you also know that image, that pull, that smell, that listening, whatever it was that pulled you there, is so important. So we need to do that at this time so much more, so that we know where we're going, rather than spiraling downward into all of the abyss of the division that exists and the anger and other kinds of negative energy that is not only hurting us as human beings, but is hurting all our relatives and many species dying. And yes, so it's our time to dream.
So powerful. Yeah. And there was something that you just shared where I got chills all over when you started talking about it, which is the collective dreaming and the power of collective dreaming. And this feels so connected to me, to your work with the Pachamama Alliance. So could you tell us a bit about that? What is it that you, well, first, could you tell us a bit about the Pachamama Alliance, how it came to be, and the work that this incredible organization is doing with collective dreaming and your work with the Pachamama Alliance?
So the Pachamama, many people understand, you know, if they go to the market and they see Pachamama and they see it as Mother Earth, and that is true. However, Pachamama is actually a Kichwa word, and it means the sacred presence of the earth, the sky, the universe, and all time. So it's really huge. So to take the name Pachamama Alliance was a big thing. And Pachamama Alliance came to be by a call from the indigenous people deep into the sacred headwaters of the Amazon, where they actually dream people from the modern world, we'll call it, to come, not because they needed to be saved, but become because they knew that our future was tied up and dependent on their future and vice versa. And so that call took place, and several people, Lynn Twist, Bill Twist, some others, 13 of them, went into the sacred hutters, not really knowing for sure what they were doing, not knowing the language or anything else. And that began an alliance. And that's not like a quick thing. It was taken years. That was, they went there in 95 or 96. And then from that, what was really clear that the dreaming of these people was that, I mean, they could have hidden, but these are great warriors. And so rather than running from what they feared or what the devastation they saw, they went toward it to transform it. That's the kind of transformation we all can be a part of. So in the Pachamama Alliance, I'm a board member. I also have been leading journeys on an annual, once a year, I lead a journey down into the sacred headwaters. That'll be coming up in August. And it is a time, what we look at is really immersing ourselves in the rainforest, in all of its amazing, diverse plant relatives, the water, the birds, the animal, I mean, insects, everything is just so alive and full. And as I say that, I know Sarah totally gets it, because she went on this journey in 2015 with me, my husband, and our guide, and then, of course, with Ashwar and people and others. And so the purpose of the Pachamama Alliance is to have human beings inspire us to contribute to creating an environmentally sustainable, spiritually fulfilling, and socially just human presence on the planet. And to that, I said a big yes, and has been doing a lot of work there and been on the board for, I guess, 6 or 7 years now, or maybe it's longer, probably 8, time goes. And I haven't been able to go down to the Amazon to be with the plants, with the forests and the water and the people. And so I'm really delighted to be able to invite people to come this August to really learn more about not only all of these relatives that are ours, but in that process, discovering it in deeper and deepening way of who you are and what you are, your purpose, your beingness here. It's just very life-giving. And so that's one of my favorite organizations that I give my time to. And I've gotten so much back, far more than I could ever give. It's really quite wonderful.
Amazing. Yeah, that trip that you and Kit do to the Amazon is absolutely life-changing. To this day, it comes up on a weekly basis. It was such a life-changing trip. Such a life-changing trip to be immersed so deeply in the Amazon, where we take a bus to a plane, to a walk, to a boat, to a hike, to arrive in the rain. It's like, whoa, that was a really epic trip into the heart. And you two hold such an incredible container. It feels like such a sacred hourglass of an experience where at the beginning of the journey, there is this integration aspect of, okay, landing in Ecuador, actually landing in this foreign country. And then we go very intentionally, very deep into the experience, into the heart of the Amazon, the heart of the rainforest, and then coming back out and integrating. It's such a powerful experience. And what I found from that in my own life is that it allowed me to carry those lessons forward in a way that I could integrate on a daily basis in my life back up here, which is so powerful. It's such a powerful gift. And of course, there are many incredible things that I experienced there in the rainforest. And I was curious to hear, do you have any stories to share about the healing power of the rainforest in your many journeys there?
Oh gosh, there's so many. But just hearing you talk, I just feel more gratitude that I get to return in August. I'm so excited about it. Yes, so one that just pops up, and I'll go into some people would say deeper, but this just gives an example of the healing power. I've never gotten hurt in the Amazon. None of the people I've ever taken have gotten hurt in the Amazon. However, I got hurt a number of years ago coming after I landed in the airport, just getting to the bus in the parking lot. There were no lights and I fell and I had the whole left side of my body black and blue. And I'm the kind of person when I bruise, it lasts for 6 to 9 months, little bruises. This was looked like I just tattooed half my body. And when I got into the rainforest and there's the first village, you know, the healers, the women and men took one look at me and they ran, and then they came back and I was escorted and lay down. And all of a sudden they began rubbing these plants on me. There was no water. I mean, there was just plant and rubbing and rubbing. And then every day they just came for me and that rubbed and rubbed and rubbed. That whole left side of my body in just the 10 days that I was in the rainforest, 12 days in Ecuador, but 10 days in the rainforest, it was almost gone. And for my husband who knows, and me too, and I was like, wow, and they go, well, that's the healing power plant and you're open to it. You communicate with the plant. So it's even more powerful because the resistance isn't there. So they weren't surprised at all. So that's just an immediate one for me because it was just so that the power of that. But the other, I think, are understanding rites of passage. Understanding that when people come, it's not a vacation. Like you described, do you vacate your current reality? Yes. Do you have fun and laughter? Absolutely. But it really is a journey. It's a transformation that happens there. And so whatever your intention or intentions that you bring, basically we hear from people, they get that and more. Whether you're 9 years old or 80 years old, all of this happens. But one of the places that we go and we sit, we're being taught about the plants and the animals and the water, and we're listening very quietly all the time. But one of them is one that you had brought up at one of our conversations is the huge kapok trees. So those of you who can't remember what a kapok tea looks like, when you have the time, you can Google it, look it up. And it's just the most beautiful, huge tree. Some of them will take 25, 30 people with their hands outstretched to get around it. And this is often in the Amazon, there'll be a tree, the kapok tree, where ceremony will be done. And this is where, when I took my then 11-year-old and 16-year-old, as well as my husband, we went. And I was very, very protective of my kids, as moms can be mama bears. And then when I started talking to the children, and they were telling me at age 7, they said, this is the first, that's when I killed a boar, my first boar. And I asked about the size, and then they showed it wasn't like the size of a little, it was huge, which fed several villages. And I was like, huh. And then they talked about when we went to the tree, of the different things that had come through the tree, but indefinitely in their major rite of passage, that they knew so clearly who they are and what they are and how to move forward. And not to say that they don't at times have doubt or fall off, but they don't stay off, of course, off the flow of whatever the river, because it's so clear to them of when they are. And that's the kind of experiences that people have, whether it's right there by that kapok trees, or they're in the water, actually in Amazon, and a pink dolphin pops up there, or being taught about all the different plants, including being invited to have, if they wish, after really listening to the mother plant, if they wanted to take the sacred plant. But all the while, it's just like you describe. You're not only taking, breathing it in with every breath, but with every cell of your body. And it's integrating. It's integrating in a way that sometimes we just have to be silent to give it space, because a word doesn't capture it. But then some bird will fly by, or just the way the wind is moving through the trees and the water, that you understand this, the power, and that we're part of this. That's the other key thing. And I guess I'll stop with that so you can ask another question or give your insight. But what I do know is there are a couple of things that people say when they come into the Amazon, generally two major things. First of all, they get off the plane, and they go, wait a minute, what is that? And I'll just give them some time to give a little bit more. And then I'll say, well, it's oxygen. These plants, you forget on a daily basis, they're taking our carbon and giving us oxygen, and you are surrounded by the most biodiverse, every kind of plant. They are taking that with love, the carbon, and they're giving you back with love. And we get to be conscious of that in every moment. And so little aches and pains or other things you have, you don't feel them now, do you? I said, that's oxygen. And then the second thing they realize is when we're going through the translations from what Oshawa or Sapara or whatever the language is to Spanish, to English, and then back, they get it after just takes usually at most a few hours. They go, oh, wait a minute. The people here don't talk about themselves as living in the rainforest. They don't really even talk about themselves as caretakers of the rainforest, even though I can see that's what they're doing. They talk about themselves as being part of the rainforest. And so just imagine if you and all of us on Mother Earth, who are not in these amazing places following the original knowledge, lived in a way that we and talk, our narrative is that we are part of the earth. We're part of the plants. We're part of the sky. We're part of all of this. How would we be? And then from that being, what will we do? And that's what gets ignited. That's what gets ignited in this sacred headwaters journey of the Amazon. And that's what part keeps calling me back, and others like you, who, even though it's been since 2015, like you said, almost a daily basis, it's coming forth.
Incredible. Yeah, absolutely. And, one of the most powerful experiences down there, which I was sharing with you earlier, was when we went to that kapok tree, and our Achuar guide shared that this is the very tree where, when the adolescents are going through the rites of passage and, determining who are they going to become in this life, that the tree itself tells each individual person what their life purpose is. That resonated in me so deeply, like a giant bell, and it has stayed with me to this day, that there is a tree, a sacred tree that will help people understand their life purpose, that this is the power and the depth of the relationship that is possible with plants. And particularly in this environment where, like you said, being completely immersed in the lungs of the earth, it's like, yeah, that is the depth of the lungs of the earth, going that deeply into this incredibly beautiful biodiverse region where the trees are breathing out oxygen all the time. And we get to be completely immersed in that on a cellular level and breathe that in. And one of the other things I was really struck by in that trip as well was how the Achuar are a dreaming culture as well. And even just the way that the Pachamama Alliance came to be, where the Achuar reached out, I think it was to Lynn Twist in a dream, right? And reached out to her in the dream state and encouraged her to come down and connect with them, how powerful that is. There is something so powerful about this aspect of collective dreaming. And I was curious if you could share a bit more about that with the Achuar culture, the power of dreaming, and what we can learn from that in Western culture.
Well, again, we need to have hope in action. So we need to be in action, but it has to come of a place that is centered and grounded out of love, out of care, out of knowing that we are part of, not over, not under, not over or lesser than anything else. And so that collective dreaming they did when they saw in their dreams, and where they are as well, we'll share our dreams, and you start finding there's these collective dreams that start happening in the forest. Because we all are connected. That's just it. The illusion of separation just gets, you know, it dissolves, you know, like in the mist of the rainforest, it just goes, you know, and becomes part of those floating rivers. But anyway, in this collective dream, as they talked every morning, so this tells you also about the power of collective dreaming. So in the morning, the Achuar rise. First, the women rise earlier, and they build a fire and they create this tea. And then everyone wakes up and it's before dawn, and you sit around and you share from the youngest to the oldest, whoever can speak will share their dream, and they'll be drinking tea. And based on those dreams, we'll guide them to what is to occur that day, and they move toward it. Like, so sometimes it's like, this is the day to go fish. And sure enough, they'll go and they see the spot in that, they'll go fish there. Or this is the day that there's not a lot of rocks there. And so they'll go, there's a particular place that you go. And some of them will kind of hiking, boating, and then you go and you find this and you bring it. And it's an offering to a tree or to an animal. And all of this will be part of it. In this dream, they saw that there were these human beings, these two-leggeds, who had so disconnected from what gave life, them life, understanding that we don't do anything on our own, and that all these beings are part of what gives us life in the every breath, every moment. So they dreamt that collectively. But and those dreams are so powerful. Now we know through science, you know, when collectively in prayer or dreams, we seek to intention to reduce, you know, suffering, violence in an area, it actually reduces. And they dream that way. So they hold on so clearly. And when they hear people having the nightmare dreams, what they say is, with great compassion, hear you, go back to sleep, go back to dream and dream a new dream. Because those collective dreams of that also are made space then. And of course, quantum physics and, you know, we're learning more and more about this. And indigenous people always knew, be careful of what you say, be careful of what you even think, because once you let that out, you can't take it back, but you can put out a new, more life-giving form. And so that's what happens. If I may, Sarah, there's also, so this again, the dreams came back around, but it's really the collective is really important. And I did not learn until the first time I went there in 2007, 2008 was December and January I went. And we did a lot of reading in preparation to go down there, because we want people to have a sense, and I plus I read everything. But I read this one section in this book, and it was something, the title was Savages or something. But in the book it had, and I screamed, and Kit, my husband, came down. What are you screaming? We thought somebody broke in. I said, listen to this. So this is in 1992. Conoco Oil Company brought to DuPont, the CEO, Edgar Willard, a plan to excavate, to drill for oil in the Amazon. And they laid the block and everything exactly where this place is. This is in 92. And next paragraph. No one knew why, but CEO Edgar Willard said, it looks good. However, you need to bring me back the signatures of the indigenous leaders that they want this. And once we get that, then we'll go in. Next line. They could not get the signatures of the indigenous leaders. They didn't go in. So that was in, that happened in 1992. I didn't go to the Amazon till 2007. I worked for a period of time as external, teaching, doing race relations and stuff, teaching about indigenous in DuPont, always asking, why am I here? What am I doing to the kind of destruction? And what I was teaching them all, including the CEO, was look how you're not treating indigenous people. You don't, we're invisible to you, let alone all the other relatives, the earth and the plants and everything. You get all these signatures to do things, contracts and everything. Why don't you get the signatures of indigenous people? Why don't you get that? That's where his request came from, and it stopped everything from happening. Now, their power of them dreaming, my ability to listen, who knows how many different configurations, but what it all comes back to is which microbiologists, quantum physicists, all are saying, we are so intimately connected. We are so intimately connected. So we need to pay attention and be intentional about how we be. And that's where those four gifts that we spoke of early on, but that's also where, when you have the opportunity, get immersed in a place like the Amazon. And if you can't go, because this is, I know you don't intend this and neither do I, the invitation is there for whoever's listening to look this up about coming with us. You're invited. However, you can do this in your own backyard. You can just go to a tree. That's how I learned to listen as a little girl. I remember it too. I would sit by a tree. My relatives would just sit there. Sometimes I'd just fall asleep, but then all of a sudden I'm like, wow. So to this day, some of my big questions, I go sit by the tree. And I think I know even what the question is. And I sit some more. And then I realize I even have the wrong question and all the answers coming through. So the power of these plant relatives, they've been so grateful. So I hope everyone, and I know people who listen to your podcast, we all share this from our hearts. We love you because you give us love all the time in spite of how we ignore you at times, that just, and that needs to stop. And so we're taking stands to make sure you, through your podcast and who you are, and me through my ways and places of being and doing, that we understand that we are part of something, not separate, where this hoop of life is abundant, but that doesn't mean we have to take. We have all we need. We can be sufficient. And that's what gets taught in the rainforest too. You see how they've been there where you're like, it's so plentiful. Why wouldn't you just take everything you need to build from the trees right here? Well, no, you wouldn't do that. We'll walk several miles to cut a tree there and then there, because you want them all to be healthy. Instead of just doing what's convenient or comfortable, that long, short-term and long-term causes great suffering.
There's so much there that you just shared.
Oh, sorry. I love being with you, Sarah, but you're transporting me there. And also I'm wanting people to really know, and I know they do from Bruce, is like, when I grew up, the sage was so important as part of Nahua, as a sage. We light the sage because Brother Smoke, not only this healing power of that sage, that the messages go out further. And I remember my grandmother teaching me, and then several months later, I will have forgotten about it. She goes, remember when we lit? And then I said, yeah. She goes, look, it just happened. And I was like, oh, it was so great. This is really just beautiful for all of us. So it's time. And luckily, the science is catching up of knowing what many of your viewers and us, we always knew. They're alive. Everything is alive. Everything's an intimate interconnection. And life seeks life rather than the mainstream teaching is everything's in the state of decay and entropy. And, you know, I'm not going to poo-poo all that, but that's not what we're discovering now. And as we listen to Indigenous, always is life seeks life. That's why I'm still here. Genocide? Ha! I'm here. And many of us are.
Yeah. So powerful. Also, what you were sharing earlier about how sitting with the tree, that oftentimes the tree will even share with you about, wait, no, there's some other questions you should be asking instead. Like, yes, I hear that. I feel that with the trees, with the plants so deeply about how they really help to steer us and guide us in being in this aligned way of being in our own life and how powerful that is. So, which clearly you embody so deeply. So Anita, tell us, how can people find out more about you and your upcoming trip to the rainforest?
Well, you can go to foursacredgifts.com. That's F-O-U-R, sacredgifts.com. And you can learn more about the gifts so that you can incorporate them in your life and all of that. Also, if you go to pachamama.org, that's P-A-C-H-A-M-A-M-A, that's a hard one, pachamama.org/journeys. You can go there and look up August 17th to August 28th. It'll say Anita and Kit or Kit and Anita. And our journey, we will be going to several places. You'll see the other journey go, there are a few hundreds less. Why are they less? Well, we really feel it's important for you to go to two different nations while you're down there, tribes. So we will spend time with the Sapara and the Ashwar so you can learn about the differences, some of the differences, but yet always the incredible healing and joy that's there, and the importance of culture, the importance of Indigenous wisdom, and the importance of these plants and water that bring us life at a time when it's all under siege. So I just want you to hear this with the softest part of your ears and expanding heart. We need you. And I say we because I is too small, and we appreciate you and you coming to this podcast and learning and listening and then sharing what you learn with others. It's really important at this time. It always has been, but even more now and for these wonderful generations to come, both of human beings and the children of all the other species as well.
Thank you so much for joining us, Anita, today. Such an honor to have you here.
Thank you so much.
And thanks so much for listening and joining us today on the Plant Spirit Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, and please follow to subscribe, leave a review, and look forward to seeing you on the next episode.